So first of all, welcome to you all, and particularly to my colleagues in the session. It's great that we are having this session on medical devices interoperability. And I will start by introducing myself. I'm Francisco Matos, I'm from Portugal, and I'm honored to be part of this session with Kai, a good friend, past president of SAIC, ambassador of SAIC at EU, and big data research, if I can say it like that. Michael Wilkening, it's vice president for strategy and business development at Dräger. And Maria Berger, it's vice president for global marketing for automated infusion system for B. Braun. So it's a really challenging session. And if I may set the scene, so now in most of the ORs, we have different equipments for different monitoring, speaking, if I may say, using normal language semantics, different languages. So most of the times we need a converter to pass this information to another system and from there on. So we still don't have any standardized protocol for data, bidirectional flux, or access to raw data. So we have a huge problem on the quality of data that we are creating and the access of the same data that we are creating. On many cases, we don't even have the synchronization of the data that we are providing for our studies and for the benefit of our patients. So it's really crucial to address these topics for not only to set the scene for the future, but also to address the most striking issues on this area. I would want to talk to you about how we are going to store the data. I want to know about regulation. What are the steps that you think that we should do and to move forward? But more than that, we want to understand the impact that this field has on the patient outcomes and on patient safety. And on that topic, we know that up to 80% of all critical incidents are related to loss of situation awareness, related to missing perception or comprehension on the information, the clinical information that we are already receiving from the patient. So if I may start with Maria, I would like to address you in terms of safety. What is the status now?
So you mentioned just that there are certain drivers be needed for the communication from medical devices into systems for documentation purpose only. The safety actually needs to happen at the bed place. And that's the reason why we all together, the industry together, work on open standards to support the nurses and the staff at the bed place directly to give them an interoperability system within the medical devices, as well as which is safe and secure in terms of certificates, in terms of how the data flows and how to interpret and go ahead with the information at the bed place.
So very practical example. Communication today is typically all channeled through a patient monitor.
Yeah.
And we do that since the 90s, since the first documentation systems came up and the first central stations. And every patient monitor comes with its own proprietary network architecture. Yeah? Like we at Dräger, we use Infinity, and GE uses Unity, and we all have our own protocols. And they are only designed for central monitoring capabilities and for a documentation, means translation into HL7, through a proprietary gateway. My ventilator does not receive any data from the patient monitor, but the patient monitor receives all the data from the ventilator. So why are we not using bidirectionally? Well, the simple answer is the connection from the ventilator to the monitor today is an unsecure, officially unsecure, proprietary, unidirectional connectivity for documentation only. It would make perfect sense if I receive an SpO2 signal, for instance, and can run an FiO2 closed loop control or get the blood gases back into the ventilator to optimize my ventilation settings. But the current technology doesn't allow that. And this is why the industry started a couple of years ago, long years ago, to actually define a new standard for medical device interoperability, which accounts for all companies who are willing to implement it. And this is great because now we can really exchange data directly between medical devices without the instant of a monitor in between, so that we can exchange data or a monitor with a ventilator or anesthetic machine, etc. And opens up completely new possibilities. But it's just been released, so it's relatively new.
May I comment on that?
Yeah.
Because you were saying that
you must.
Your industry agreed on that. That means a lot. On the same side, it doesn't mean anything because it excludes also industries who are not willing to do so. And
some don't.
And there's a problem. And I would say there must be a must that you're all being forced to enable us to get the data, you get the data. But this is a difficult thing. And therefore, at least in Europe, we need some sort of legislation, some sort of law by the European Commission.
Yeah.
That is quite difficult because this is impacting on the market. And also, you know, how nowadays medical devices being bought by hospitals. So by law, it needs to be advertised. You then put your offer in as a company, and then the hospitals are looking, well, they have this advantage, they have this advantage. And at the end of the day, it's very often the price.
Price.
And therefore, the whole system does not provide 100% what we need in a hospital. That's my short statement, and I'm very happy that you're trying to convince me that you're on the right way.
We will love to have this more mandatory, which actually doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's the point.
It will not go into legislation, but I think it will be kind of a self-regulating market.
Yeah.
Look at when USB or HDMI for television came up. Now there were different standards to transport video signals or to connect accessories to a computer. Why did these standards make it? Because the majority of the companies who made computers agreed that USB is the best solution for it. And IEEE, as the biggest organization for international standards, they made it an international standard. Is it mandatory? No. But if I was a computer manufacturer, I would be stupid not to have USB connectors on my computer.
Mm.
And I think maybe it's just a matter of time that these kind of...
We don't have the time. I'm sorry.
The problem is in medical devices, time cycles are way longer.
Yeah.
For computers, we talk about time cycles of 2 years, 3 years, and the next Windows or next technology cycle comes. For medical devices, we talk about 10 years. So that's...
Do we still talk about 10 years? Or
no,
we talked before about 10 years?
So this new standard, it's an ISO IEEE standard. It has been published in 2020 as an ISO standard. There are some companies like B. Braun, like Dräger, we jumped on it very early because we were part of the development process. But as you said, Kai, we need advocates in the societies and representing the users and the hospital to more actively promote it and say, hey, we need this interoperability from a clinical standpoint. So that should be the criteria when purchasing new equipment.
And I mean, a good example, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
A very good example is that the European Union has agreed now on that charging devices. It's been done by one standard, and I think it's in, is it next year? I think it's 25, I think.
Yeah.
And it is possible. And the reason was this very simple. They said the amount of wastage we are producing, cables, adapters, and everything, it's so bad for the environment, that worked.
Yes.
So if we argue we could be better for the environment by having a mandatory standard, I think that argument could be used by the European Commission.
Yeah.
And I think one point is also that now it's kind of an initiative. It has been established between the industry partners, not yet everyone hooked on this new concept, but by the time it's going to go live and that the first use cases will be available in hospitals that you can actually see how you benefit out of the data exchange, that will then, I think, convert the market as well as, and I fully agree with you, that needs to be the standard. shouldn't be any discussion about this anymore. It should be kind of mandatory requirement for medical devices and the logic in the hospitals as such. However, when it comes to the budget, you also know now how the tenders have been written. Purely on single devices, budget been released for single care areas, not for the entire hospital, not thinking in an ecosystem approach. That should be the future. That's where we now as industry work together. That's why we want to exchange those data, because you live the ecosystem, but yet that's not been supported. And that will also change then the purchasing and the tender management, that it goes to a completely different landscape.
But the question with just setting the scene from the industry is that you're just stuck on access and quality of data, but not linking that with regulation or any other specifics on how the data should be taken care of.
At the end of the day, it will be linked. Yeah, let's take the example. There are so many lectures here around AI. Yeah? So everybody talks about AI now. I will give a lecture there later today on it.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Here.
Well done.
The issue with that is most of the initiatives that hospitals start today, designing new models for, you know, early detection of deterioration, etc., they will never hit the market because the underlying infrastructure for data is not made for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not medical grade data. It's not high resolution data with the necessary velocity. We don't have any agreement how to store data in big repositories. Typically for AI, we don't even have any means to connect different hospitals together to feed their data into one big data lake, which doesn't happen. So everybody has
data, act is not
data
making it easier.
On-premise somewhere in the basement. And so as long as we don't agree on these quality levels for data, these things will be theory only.
Yeah.
Yes. But we have countries where you have one hospital system, go to the UK, the NHS, then you go, for example, to Germany. You have so many private companies owning hospitals, even in Portugal and Spain now, makes it even more complicated, because how can you force them to do these things? Yeah. On one side, the diversity in Europe is fantastic. On the other side, it's a disaster in terms of really showing our strengths, because there would be a huge strength if we could really pool our data and compare and using algorithm. But this is obviously something we cannot solve today in our panel, but at least we can outline there should be approaches to do so.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, if we look, let's take the example of China. Yeah, more than 1 billion people. Nobody there probably is asked if he agrees to the terms of conditions of data usage, so they can collect data across the entire country in big masses. Such initiatives are really missing here in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, we have now Data Act, which is actually preventing sharing those data unless
unless
you go through a bunch of papers.
Correct.
Yeah. So maybe we should really start with some more, you know, basic clinical bedside applications before talking about AI and these big
things. If we don't have dreams, we won't make it.
Correct. We need to have the vision.
Yeah.
We call it visions. It's much better than dreams only, but
no, it's a dream. Because the vision is something I can already visualize that's going to happen. It's a little bit less, it's a dream.
Yeah, it's
far.
Yeah, blurry still. But again, we have to start from scratch. We really first have to design the standards. Like HL7 made it. So we are all collecting our data for recording or documentation via HL7. And nobody's questioning that standard anymore. And there's a new version now with FHIR. Everybody agrees, FHIR should be the new standard for documentation. So we need that agreement on device-to-device communication as well. But, and the standard is there. It just has to be rolled out successfully.
But I think also, I mean, HL7 is there. It's been a defined standard and everyone can provide those data. But what happens with those data? It's just been stored, sorry to say. It's just purely for documentation. So now with the SDC, we want to change that into the direction, what is the use case? What is the use case where you need to have the support from us as industry that we can guide you in your workflow, that you get all the information that helps to interpret and understand what's happening at the bed place? And I think from this perspective, now SEC has been written and is going to go live with individual use cases, which can then be explored and expand to more use cases.
Interesting part is, go ahead.
To answer this question, you're talking about use cases. You have the daily life in hospital where a lot of doctors doing their job, 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 whatsoever, and they need good medical devices for good patient treatment and for making good decisions. Tick the box. And then you have interested people, you have university hospitals who are doing research and improving these algorithms, these devices, whatsoever. And they need to have access to far more data.
Yes.
And these data should be in a way not restricted or limited. And that is the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. There's 50 petabytes of data that hospitals create every year. 50,000 petabytes per year.
Can you explain this? What is this petabyte to the audience? How much?
So 1 petabyte is 10,000 terabytes. That's quite a lot.
Yeah.
The interesting part is 97% of the data that we collect in hospitals goes unused. It's just sitting somewhere in a shelf in a memory somewhere. It's never been looked at again.
And it costs energy.
Energy, resources, a lot of money. And we never look at it again. It's just for legal reasons sitting there. What a value. It's a treasure. But we need an infrastructure to actually utilize that data.
But the question is how to. And having this connected strategy from scratch, from getting the data up to using the data, and how you can make it accessible to everybody. So if you are part of the EU panel to discuss this, because there is a lot of data and there is a huge trend on having faster, but concerning to data as itself, not to medical data or interoperability. So if you are part of this specific working group at EU, what should be our main criteria for a regulation?
That's a very good question. And I know it's impolite to answer a question with a question, but if you allow me, I would... I try to answer it.
Okay.
The problem is the people who decide for us at the European level. Some of them are doctors, some of them are politicians, and very often we and you as industry are not explaining the problem in detail enough that they understand it.
Agree.
The next problem is they have to read every day papers like this. It's impossible to dive deep. So I see the only way is you have to identify an individual at that level who can fight for a subject like this. And this person needs to be briefed in a way to really understand the problem so that he or she can explain to other politicians in this group in their language the problem. And I think we have not only a problem of communication, different languages. We are in Europe, Portuguese, German, English, whatsoever. We also have a problem of different backgrounds. So we're coming from medicine, you're coming from industry. And really to focus this on a person who makes decisions or helps to make decisions, this is what we have to do. And I think, you know about it. We just, with ESAIC, we just have written a white paper for the European Commission with certain points we would like to address, obviously patient safety, patient blood management, and some other things. These are, for all of us, approachable. We have imagination what it means. But the people who make decisions haven't got a clue. And that is a problem.
But I think it's very important what you just said. We have to do that together, because if we as the industry approach the European Union in terms of regulations, etc., it sounds like completely biased. they're just speaking for themselves. They want to make their lives easier. Which is definitely not the case. But if we stand up with one voice and say, hey, from a patient point of view, from a clinical point of view, this makes perfect sense, and there's even evidence that it will work and make sense. That's a completely different power towards authorities than the societies go alone or we go alone.
Yeah, but I personally believe it only works, well, we need you for that, that's for sure, if you're in agreement as industry. So it does not make sense to pick out one company. Mm-hmm. This is a disadvantage.
Yes.
So it needs to be industry
consensus
together, and you have two representatives to saying we represent industry, different companies,
at least on a European level.
Yeah. And then it might work, but we're to cut a long story short, there's election in 2 weeks' time. Is it next week or in 2 weeks' time? No, next week.
Next week
we have the election for a new parliament in Europe. And around 6 weeks later, the new specific groups within the commission are being built up for medicine, for this and this and that. And then we know the people. And then we know by European law, the European Commission is welcoming lobbying. So they invite us to lobby. They invite us to give them opinion, knowledge, and everything. And that is the next step. And ESAIC has agreed on that step some years ago when it said we have to work more on a European level. And when we were creating this position of ambassador on the level to have a voice. And the voice needs to be medical. Yes. It can't be industry. It needs to be medical, and medical needs to explain we have a need. And this is our partner industry, or we need to have this partner from patient relatives, representatives, or whatsoever. And that is the step. And it's something we have not done before. That means we are beginners. And we should have done this years before. And let's talk about intensive care medicine. COVID, we have done it. We have saved Europe, but it's forgotten now because nobody wants to know anything about COVID-19 anymore. So now we have learned about everything, and now it's our job to go there and to find out what can we achieve, what can we do, and we have to explain our problems in a way that they understand and make it to their mission to change it.
True. And we can be represented by MedTech Europe, for instance, or by independent organizations. So this new interoperability standard has been developed by a non-for-profit organization in Germany. Yeah? So they could represent us in a neutral way, but be able to explain it in a understandable way, and not biased by one or two or three companies.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think it's important, absolutely. It's also important because not all companies like these new standards.
Of course not.
It's disrupting their business models. Yeah, I mean, if you have a kind of proprietary system and sell it to a hospital, you lock them in. Yeah, once they are in that system, it's very expensive and difficult to get out again. And this is something which is a paradigm shift for us because we give up our uniqueness in these digital systems and say, no, we want to talk to each other. And there are more and more companies applying to this now, implementing it. But as I said, it will take a couple of years. And in the end,
it's the hospitals who
should really promote this and force this and demand this from the industry.
Yeah.
Because only then it will really roll out and be implemented.
But so we have a long run, too long, for sure, because that was supposed to be done. And we already have legal ground for data, but not for medical data and for this interoperability. So this is something that we are missing a lot. But we have different levels here. We have a higher level, but we also have the daily basis. So we are creating this data. we are not using any data. We still don't have any interoperability. So how can we be better today with the setting that we have right now for our patients and with the doctors that we have in our world? Because it's a striking issue for patient safety right now.
Yeah, it's a communication topic. Yeah? We need to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Of course, as an example, next EasyCam, we will share a stand and we will show interoperability use cases together between companies, yeah? And not just us. So there's something moving now, slowly, because you always have to give something up if you go into a joint system, but the use cases are really convincing.
It's really being a really straightforward question. Are you the outliers or you're just part of the consensus? Because is everybody agreeing on that from the industry part?
No, as I said before, there are some rather big players who rather stick with their own system because it reflects their business model. So it's actually, yeah, it will take time to actually convince them as well.
Yeah.
But if they realize, aha, okay, obviously hospitals or yeah, healthcare systems are interested in this and make this a criteria for their purchasing process, maybe they will change their mind over time.
So having a maybe, probably Kai's approach will be more efficient.
We need both. We need both.
Yes, for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, of course, the business model will change for us. However, we will still be the expert for the one or the other area, which doesn't mean that we are not willing to share data. So the good thing is if you cooperate also or interact with other companies, you focus on the data. It's going to be a data-centric approach, but the expert, we can still be in that particular usage, in that particular area by giving the know-how, sharing it, and working closely together on the use cases. And that's where we started. That's why we are sitting here. Yeah. And more to come. But for this, we also need then your input. We need to work closer together and to bring it then into tenders. Exactly. Because if that's not been demanded, then we can come up with those concepts. But the thing is later on in terms of the budget, where does the budget come from? How does the tenders going to be rewritten? So if that's not been demanded, why should everyone else invest? And this is an investment we currently do from industry. We invest and change also roadmaps just because we believe in this new system, in the way of that we share data, that we come up with a common use case together into the market. That's our investment. But we also need to see that that's what you need, as well as that others will follow us because we are changing now the market.
And this goes back to easy explanation. Doesn't make sense to explain how a specific interface works or protocol works. But if I explain to you that with that new standard, you are able to remote control medical devices from outside a patient room in an isolation scenario, that's value. Yeah? So the interface itself doesn't create any value by itself, but the use case itself, yeah. Or what we're doing, creating a silent ICU where you can disable all alarms at the bedside permanently if a secure alarm distribution is in place and active. Yeah. So these are examples for the implementation, which are much more convincing than just saying, yeah, now we can talk to each other. Yeah. For what?
What's the use case? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kai, do you think there are still any evidence-based gaps that we need to fill before we are stronger at the EU level in terms of patient outcomes or whatever?
Yes and no. Some years ago, I was really convinced patient outcome is a very, very strong result. But if you, I know you go every day to a hospital, but if you're working in a hospital, there are so many things which can happen to patients, it's unbelievable. They fall out of beds. They get the wrong medication. The surgeon has a bad day. The intensivist is making the wrong decision. There's hundreds of things. And I believe now, if you mix everything together, it's diluting a proper outcome. That's what I think. Because standard operating procedures, they're in many hospitals in place. But stuff is short, meanwhile, everywhere in Europe. People are not well trained anymore, etc., etc. So I'm not really convinced anymore that we can use outcome in this direction. We could use maybe short outcome. So we do an intervention and measure the impact on a special endpoint.
What about adverse events related?
So, for example, if we're here with monitoring hypertension during induction of anesthesia, hypertension during surgery, that could be easily done. And the problem is not if you measure, let's say, blood pressure every 5 minutes. No, if you have beat by beat a blood pressure, and therefore you can see blood pressure is fantastic, or you had a drop for 5 minutes, and when you have elderly, you know, they suffer maybe from more delirium, whatsoever. So, but the overall saying, oh, outcome or hospital length of stay, we all know hospital length of stay is so difficult because the old grandma is in a hospital, is ready to be discharged, but where to go?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a problem everywhere.
It's everywhere, and it's a big problem in Europe, and we have an aging population now. So I think we have to rethink who are the patients we are talking about, and there will be 60 plus the next 20 years. 60 plus.
Of course.
So I think the way we are thinking and the way we sort of where we're moving now, we have to redo the job completely. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. But talking about the clinical problem that you just addressed, like hypotension or hypertension, whatever. If you have your monitor and it tells you blood pressure high, it doesn't tell you anything about the root cause of that blood pressure going up. Yeah? Is it medication or is it ventilation or is it fluid or
pain?
Pain, you don't know. So, and this is what you stated in the beginning, this loss of situation awareness. Yeah, we need to combine the context to a certain situation in much more clinical views, clinical context displays, etc., so that the conclusion out of all the data from different devices is already kind of pre-processed to help you making better.
I agree with you, but we have another problem. That is, many doctors nowadays, they don't like to be told by a third party, brackets, machine, closing brackets, what's going on, or suggesting what kind of settings you should use for the ventilator on the ICU. And if you have a device which tells you fantastic things, still someone has to take over responsibility. So I think we're not there. But it is something also I would support. Why not being supported by fantastic, huge databases, making better decisions? But we're not there.
But you also said that you experienced a staff shortage. So where does all the professionals come from? So when we have a system which supports and not taking fully responsibility over, but you still can guide those.
I think you don't want to go to this direction because I blow it up in 1 second, because the staff shortage we have in many European countries are self-made. Yeah. If you look at Germany, we do 18 million operations every year. We have 85 million people. Every fourth person has been operated every year. That's rubbish. So if we know that 20-30% of the operations are not indicated, why are we doing them? It's very simple. More operations, more money.
Sure. Yeah.
So if we would have 20-30% less operations, we don't have shortage of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're back to politics. Yep. I'm getting really angry now, as you can see. Yeah. Does anybody want to
like you better that
now?
Way? Yeah. No, but that's
not against you. So,
no, I'm good. I'm fine with that.
I'm running warm now. Yeah.
No, but that could be a good argument to state at EU level about the support on the decision making to prevent and to promote patient safety and to prevent adverse events.
Yeah.
But more than that, I think we still don't have really a ground for discussion together.
Yeah.
And what we are doing here, it's not really common. Mm-hmm. And if we have, for instance, if ESAIC is going to develop a statement on interoperability
consensus.
Yeah. On a consensus backed with the industry,
yeah.
How would that be shaped? So we'll have a funding statement based on everything that we talked about, the outcomes, the patient safety issues, the costs, how it impacts all system in terms even of the sustainability of the system and the environmental sustainability of the system. But again, who should be on the signatures? How can we engage with the,
very
with
good
the patients?
Point. Very, very good point.
How that could be addressed? Because it's easy to do the paper. We could do it this afternoon. The question is not that. It's how it's going to be shaped and presented.
Yeah, I can give you an answer to that because in a different issue, we do guidelines. And we do guidelines how certain medications being used. We do guidelines how to treat the patient. But we are now a little bit abstract now here because we're talking about machines. And we could do statements, as you said, but the person on the political side, they do not understand the statement and they do not know how to handle it and to translate this into something which needs to be done on the level. So I think we have to get in personal contact with decision makers. Then we have to explain them our problems.
But who is the we and who is backing the we?
Yes, the we, at least we can talk about ISAIC. We have no small
yes.
group and this is the first start. And then, as I said, we're beginners. We have to learn walking. We're still crawling on the floor. So we have to learn how to walk in this new environment, what we have decided it needs to be our environment. And then we shall see. I can't give you a better answer at the moment because that would be not... it would be a lie if I would tell you more. So it's we have to start.
Yeah.
We start in a way by making contact, and we have some contacts.
Yeah.
And then these are the first steps.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Helsinki Declaration. Yeah, the more stakeholders actually sign it and agree to it, the stronger
absolutely
the impact of
it. So good things to talk about it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And create this alliance of the willing, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the question being more specific, it's if we do this kind of approach, we have a strong movement at EU level, led by ESAIC. Who should be backing this movement?
Yeah.
Who is going to sign for it? It's going to be specific industries. We know that the European Patient Safety Foundation, for sure.
No, but MedTech Europe,
more?
For instance.
Yeah.
The organization,
Yeah.
Later, but you know how it works. At the beginning, it's on a personal level.
Yeah.
Can you convince on a personal level a decision maker? And the decision maker will then guide you back saying, well, I need this and this and this for that. And then you work on this and you go back. And at the moment, I think it's highly dependent on people who are convinced that we need a change, who have the background, and also are approachable people. Unfortunately, yep. That's the way it is. There's not a pathway where you hand something in with the European Commission and then it goes this way, and at the end you have a successful result. It won't work like this. It's on an individual level. How you know, I know this guy, because I know, for example, one at the European Commission, his wife, she's an anesthesiologist. So that is a key we have to this person. So it works, unfortunately, on this. It might be better in the future, but at the moment, that's the way I think we have to work on this issue.
Yeah.
And how can we raise awareness within clinicians for this topic?
Very simple. Creating really, really interesting symposiums at Euroanesthesia and discussing panels. And I mean, we are here a small group now of people who are interested, but I would like to see 500 people in the room and saying, yeah.
Go for it.
That makes sense.
Here's our problem.
Yeah.
But this needs to be prepared. It's not something like you're 3 months before Euroanesthesia in Lisbon. Oh, let's do it. That doesn't work. Certain things need a year preparation. And basically, my personal opinion is if you as industry want to kick in this, you have to start now building a group of different partners of industry and starting to make a program and talking now, because the program for Lisbon is almost done.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have to do it in 2 years, and that's too long from now on.
True.
That's true.
Yeah.
Can we leave this as a final statement?
Yes. Yes. So I think that I would just ask for the top of your wishing list for the next year as a call for action.
Yes.
To make it work. Can we start again by you, Maria?
Sure. I think we should definitely come up with, and we as an industry, we have a little
right thing. We is the key word.
Yeah.
We
have a solution and which we can show, and then next steps needs to be defined.
So I think we achieved a lot in involving the industry more in the scientific program in these conferences. I think there's still room for improvement. As you said, we need a bigger stage for those topics which really underline the collaboration between clinicians and industry, because this kind of research will only work together.
Yeah.
And even I believe, and that's my final statement now, I even believe if you talk to 5,000 people here which are attending, probably 3/4 even don't understand the problem. So we have not started the communication that everybody's on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
So if we as a society are not on the level, how can we expect that someone's going to help us?
Yeah.
It won't work.
That's a great depressive topic to finish.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your optimism.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay.